right, once you've got your stuff, go ahead and find a nice comfortable seat on your mat. And if you'd like, you can close your eyes. Namaste. So welcome. Today we'll be doing a flow for the hips, and there are several ways you could approach doing something for the hips. I tend to approach them in two ways. One is moving the femur bone through its six basic articulations, and the other way is trying to focus on the muscle groups in the hips and the legs. So today we'll focus on the muscle groups. Let's begin with the back of the thigh, what are called the hamstrings, the four muscles in the back of the thigh. We'll take the right leg straight, bring the left foot to the inside of the thigh, and then just allow the upper body to fold forward and down over the leg. And what you're looking for, what you'd like to feel, is a stretch in the back of the right thigh. In this style of teaching, which is called a functional approach, what's important is not how you look in the postures, but how you feel. Instead of thinking about putting your knee or your foot in any particular spot and assuming that if it's in that spot, your pose is effective, instead you need to use a sort of proprioceptive alignment rather than a visual alignment. The pose is correct when you feel the right thing in your body. Today's postures are very simple. You'll be asked to feel it in one area only. In this case, the back of the right thigh. If you feel some stretching there, you're golden. You might feel stretching in your back or other parts of your body. It's perfectly fine. The other quality that we need to bring to the posture for it to be effective is we need to make absolutely sure that we're safe. So, while it isn't true that if you feel pain, you're necessarily hurting yourself, it could be the case that if you're in pain, something is wrong or something is off. So unless you're more experienced and you sort of know what you're doing and you're willing to sort of take the matter into your own hands, I'm going to ask you to let me know if you something is painful. This posture usually isn't a problem, but some of the poses we'll do later could be. Hey guys, how are you? Did you sign up online?
I didn't.
No?
Mary Beth. And then she's new. You can sign her up afterwards. I think she might do them.
Mary Beth, what's your last name?
Howell.
H-W.
Do you need me to do anything yet?
Yeah, let's see if we can... I don't see. Is that your mom?
No. Friend of mine.
Mary
yoga
Beth Howell. How do I spell her last name?
H-O-W-E-L-L.
H-O-W-E-L-L. There she is. All right, and what's your name?
I don't
type
in
the
system yet.
That's okay. We'll put you in there. That's what I should have had you do right there. Sorry.
You're right. Sorry about being late.
That's all right.
I'm stuck in traffic. Do you need any of that yet? Or
We'll just do. Yeah, we'll do that later. Let's see. I want to get you to sign your waiver. And was she paying for you, or are you?
I'll pay for it after class.
You'll pay? It may be. Sometimes they actually text me in the middle of class, so
okay.
We'll see. I may have to. Okay. Sorry about that. So as most of you know, if you're having trouble folding forward, you can sit up on a block or blanket or bolster. That'll tilt you forward a little more aggressively. And on the other hand, if you're coming forward too quickly, too aggressively, you can put something in front of you, like a bolster, like Lisa's using, or a block. So while the props aren't necessary to do a yin practice, they can be a very nice aid and help to modulating how much intensity we have. They can both create more intensity and less intensity. So it's interesting that very often props are used in flow practice for people who are of less flexibility. But in yin, I very often find I use props for people who have more flexibility. So it's not uncommon that we actually use more props for these people. Let's switch sides. So now we're targeting the back of the left thigh. Those are the hamstrings. And the reason we do one leg at a time is because it generally gets deeper into the muscles of the legs by doing that. Both legs together is a nice way to affect the spine more. But today we're not that interested in the spine. You might feel it in your back. That's perfectly fine. It's a very therapeutic stretch. But it's just not our focus. And so what you'll find is as we change our focus from week to week, a lot of the same things are happening in your body. Yes, you are stretching the back of your spine in this posture, same as you would in a spine flow. But it's just sort of our emphasis. Because for some people, in certain poses, you'll find that really you can only do one thing at a time. And so it's nice to isolate what are we really interested in, and then to focus on that and to give ourselves the most options possible to achieve the best result. So as I mentioned at the beginning, what we'd like is to stretch the four quadrants of basically the thigh bone. You can think of your thighs having four basic myofascial groups. There are many, many muscles in your legs, many, many, many muscles, but you cannot stretch them individually. That's what's important to understand. A masseuse, a very good masseuse, maybe could go in there and isolate individual muscles and work them and knead them and release them. You cannot do that with postures, with asanas. This is what's important to understand. Asana is a blunt instrument. That's what my yin teacher likes to say, and he's right. You can't stretch just your rectus femoris or just vastus medialis. You have to stretch groups of muscles. So what we've done in today's practice is we've sort of split the thigh up into the back of the thigh, the inside of the thigh, the outside of the thigh, and the front of the thigh. And so we will do each leg individually, and we will stretch all four of these quadrants. While this can be done in a more flow style practice where we're moving and stretching more actively and we're not holding for such a long time, the yin practice gives us certain benefits that the flow practice doesn't, and vice versa. And this is why my teacher chose the name yin for this practice. He was trying to imply that it's one half of a whole practice. It's one half of what you really need to do to stay healthy and strong in your body. There are others who claim to be the originators of the yin practice, but they actually weren't using the name yin. And what Paul did was take one component of what they were doing and sort of expand and elaborate on it and bring a Western anatomical view to it. And that's basically what we call yin yoga today, at least how I teach it. So one of the main components in a yin practice is the amount of time you spend in the poses. Many things happen when you hold a posture for a long time with muscles relaxed. You get deep into releasing the fascia that surrounds both the muscle, interpenetrates the muscle, and surrounds the joints. This is, again, unique to holding poses for a long time. When we flow, we stretch the belly of the muscle, what are called the sarcomeres, the red tissue in the muscle. But a muscle isn't made of just sarcomeres. It's made of collagen fibers, connective tissue, that encases the sarcomeres and then are bundled into groups and then encased again. And then the joints are surrounded by a thicker layer of fascia or connective tissue. This is why sometimes yin yoga is called joint yoga or yoga for your joints. All right, let's come up and then back onto our back. We'll relax and rebound. The rebound is where you just take a few moments to close your eyes and feel into your experience. When rebounding, it's important not to have an agenda or expectations for how you think you should feel. This will allow you to pay attention to what is, rather than what you think should be. Let's bring the legs in. We'll give them a nice squeeze. It's called a leg cradle. And you can move actively side to side. You can rock forward and back. You can lift your head and neck up, whatever feels good. And then let's slide hands under the hips. Extend our legs toward the ceiling. Lift the head and neck. And gradually lower the legs. Keep head and neck lifted. Hover for a moment, then pop the legs up. And let's come all the way up to seated. Once you're up, let's come into a tabletop position with the hands under the shoulders and knees under the hips. We'll turn sideways, either left or right, 90 degrees, so facing the side of your mat. Once you're facing the side of your mat, take your right leg straight out to the right, like a kickstand, just straight out to the side. And then take your left knee to the left as far as it will go. Feel free to pad the left knee with a blanket, if that helps. You can stay on your hands or come to your forearms, or you can lay your torso or chest against the bolster if you prefer. All right, I call this the half splits, and it's the most effective adductor stretch that I've found, which is why I use it quite a bit. It's not one that my teachers use, but I use it quite a bit because just from my experience, this is a very good way to isolate the adductor muscle group, the groin. So what I'd like you to feel is a stretch in the inside of your right thigh. Does everyone feel that? Mm-hmm. All right, please let me know if you don't. Okay. Now, even though you feel the stretch, you can alter it or change it to some degree. You can take the right foot and have the toes pointing forward, or you can have that foot pointing up, or you can have the foot or toes pointing away from you. Even though it looks like you're moving your ankle, you're actually moving your femur bone, which is your thigh bone. Okay, That's important because the muscles we're stretching attach to your thigh bone. So if you change the orientation of your thigh bone, you will change the way the muscles stretch. Maybe just a little bit, maybe a lot. The reason why I can't tell you is because your body is unique, believe it or not. It is unique. There's never been a body just like it on this planet, and there never will be again. So you're having a unique human experience. Yes, we share a lot. There's a lot of similarity. But at the end of the day, your experience is unique. What that means is your yoga is unique. Okay? You can learn from others. You can learn from their experience. Some suggestions they have may work for you. But at the end of the day, your yoga is unique as well. Okay? So you have to be willing to honor that. Outside of that foot, you could have your left foot, the other foot, flexed or pointed, and you could have that heel behind the knee, or some people pull it in closer to their buttocks. Then you can have your hips over the knee and ankle, or you can push your hips back closer to your left heel. Again, how does that affect the stretch in the inside of the right thigh? You might feel the stretch in the inside of the left thigh as well, which is great. The right leg is focusing primarily on the long adductors, like gracilis and magnus and longus. The bent leg is focusing more on the shorter adductors, like pectineus and brevis. Outside of the hips and the legs, a very powerful tool you have at your disposal is your torso. The torso can be straight out from the hips, right? Basically neutral spine. Or you can walk your spine off to the left or to the right. And you might find that that either enhances the stretch in the thigh or makes you more comfortable. And sometimes being more comfortable means less stretch, right? For some people, the problem isn't how do I get more stretch, it's how do I get less. It's too much. Once again, just like in the first pose, if you feel that you're hurting yourself or that you might be hurting yourself, please just let me know. We will take a look at your posture together. Otherwise, what you want to do is just let your body sit there. Be still. You can close your eyes if you'd like. Try and relax. Try and notice how there might be areas where you're sort of holding or tensing. When we feel something intense or strong, like a strong emotion or a strong sensation, very often there's a sort of habitual tensing of our muscles, sometimes in the body or sometimes in the jaw or the face, the lips, the brow. And this tensing can make the experience very unpleasant. Very often we find if we can just become aware of how we're tensing our body and relax the muscles, we actually find the experience isn't so bad. And this has been discovered for chronic pain patients as well. They've discovered that if they fight with the pain, it's unbearable. They can't stand it. They can't live. They can't function. But if they can learn to reinterpret the pain as just a sensation that's there, that's present as part of their experience, it's not something they have to resist. They start to get better. They get their lives back. They're able to function. All right, let's go ahead and switch sides. Take your time. Okay, so left leg goes out to the left. Use your props however you like. And again, if you're having trouble, I may have a suggestion for you that would be helpful. Does anyone need a hand? Yeah? What's the trouble? From like a tabletop position. Uh-huh. But you probably want to be more like on your mat. So you can like go over to that side and then kick the leg out to this side. Oh, well, yeah, you're kind of sandwiched there, so. You got it? Right in here is where you want to feel it. Okay, so then grab your block and place the block right, well, kind of like almost cut off the bottom part of your leg, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Do you feel a stretch in the right area? Inside of the thigh? Yeah, right there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the knee's okay, yeah? All right, good. So doing what we're doing is very important for our health, and this may not immediately be evident to many people. If you grew up when I grew up, and I'm not sure that things have changed that much, you grew up with the idea of fitness and exercise and health as being something where you burn as many calories as you can, or you try and shape the muscles of your body to make them very toned and sort of defined. That's a healthy body. Well, it turns out the longer I teach and the more I learn about human movement and health, the less true that is. Even the idea that we need to get our heart rate up for a certain amount of time is possibly also a myth and not accurate. So why is stretching important for our health? Well, because movement is important for our health. And as we age, most of us will go through a process of slowly losing our ability to move the joints of our hips, legs, and low spine. Slowly over time. So slowly that most of us will not notice it until it's possibly too late to completely undo the damage. So ideally, if we are armed with this knowledge, we know that we want to keep stretching the muscles and the joints of our hips and legs pretty much for the rest of our lives. It's just something that we do. It's like changing the oil in your car. If you want this body to keep running and to serve you, then you just keep stretching the muscles in your hips and your legs. For my money, yin yoga is the best way to do this. I've taught yin yoga and flow yoga for years, and each has its strengths. Each has its place. But as far as flexibility is concerned, for my money, yin yoga wins in that regard, especially when it comes to the hips and the legs, because the muscles in the hips and the legs are, the muscles and connective tissue are very thick and strong. And so when we hold a posture for minutes and minutes and minutes at a time, it gives the pose time to really get into those tissues and to transform them and change them. If we just stretch for 30 seconds or so, yeah, it might make a change, especially within that class. If we warm up our muscles and jump around, we might find we're getting more and more flexible within that period of time. But then we might find that later on, once our muscles cool off, we're not really that much more flexible than before. Whereas my impression and experience of the yin practice is very often the gains we make in yin practice seem to hold longer. They seem to have a more permanent effect. So as some of you have heard me say before, but in general, if you are interested in counteracting the effect of what we consider the natural aging process, you want to focus on lower body flexibility and upper body strength. Strength in your arms, chest, upper back, and core muscle groups. So vinyasa yoga is what you do for the upper body strength part. Let's go ahead and take a child pose. We'll rebound there. go ahead and take child pose, hips back to your heels, relax. You can bring those knees in really close. That might feel really nice right now after having the legs so wide. Great. From there, let's go ahead and inhale to tabletop, and we'll do some bear pose. So bear is just a free form movement. You move your spine forward and back, twist side to side, move side to side, combine the movements together however you like, and you're working your spine and your hips and your shoulders, anywhere that sort of has kinks in it, you work the kinks out. Anywhere that feels sort of asleep or dull, try and bring some life and energy and blood into these areas. Then we'll tuck our toes, lift our hips, come up and back into the downward facing dog. And we'll use that pose to stretch our toes, ankles, knees, and hips. So pedaling back and forth a few times, stretching the legs out, stretching the hips out. Good. Then let's bring the right knee toward the right wrist, right foot toward the left wrist, hips down and back, coming into what we call sleeping swan, which is a yin pigeon pose, okay? All right, so I'd like you to feel this on the outside of your right buttocks or hip, okay? So you should feel it right in there, maybe alongside the leg, and you can relax your torso forward and down. So the active version of the pigeon pose, which is Ekapada Rajakapatasana, the one where you're up, is a back bend. But we're not really interested in the back bend today, right? Like I said at the beginning, we're interested in isolating a few things. And what we'd like to isolate here is the outside of the right hip and leg. Those muscles are called the gluteals. And it includes six small muscles deep inside the hip called the rotators. So we are stretching both the glute max, minimus, medius, the tensor fascia lata, the piriformis, and the other six rotators, and the giant tendon on the side of the leg called the iliotibial tract. So if you feel it in any or all of these areas, your pose is effective. However, there's one other quality. The knee and the ankle need to feel safe, right? So please make sure your right knee and ankle are happy with what's going on in your pose. While if you feel it in the right leg, the pose is effective, it's also true that you could perhaps enhance the pose or make it more effective or more comfortable. This posture probably has more variations than any of the other poses in today's class. So let's look at what they are. The right knee could be pointing straight ahead, or it could be angled out to the right. That's called abduction. Don't be shy about experimenting with that angle, as it can greatly transform which of the 10 muscles is getting the most stretch. So when you're stretching 10 muscles, you are not stretching them equally. And so what that might mean is there are 2, 3, 4 or more variations of this posture, all of which give you a sensation of stretch in that same area. Excuse me. But a different sensation of stretch, right? You're stretching different muscles in the same group. The right foot could be back toward your left hip. That's what most of you are doing. And most of you are doing that because you don't have enough external rotation in the hip to do more. So that is safe. However, some people have more external rotation. So they can bring the right foot up, right up toward the front of their mat, so that the shin bone, the right shin bone, runs parallel with the front edge of their mat. Their knee is at a right angle. Okay? For most people, that's going to create a strain in the knee and the ankle that is simply unsafe. How do you know? You can feel it in your knee. At a certain point, it stops increasing the stretch in the hip, and it starts just creating pain in the knee. The hips could be rocked to the left or to the right. They could also be squared to the ground. Some students like to take a block underneath the hip to stabilize it, to keep the hip square. You're welcome to do that. There's no right or wrong with that, okay? If rolling off to one side gives you a better stretch, a safer stretch, a more comfortable stretch, I can't argue with that, okay? It's not how it looks, it's how it feels that's important. Then finally, again, the torso can be a very powerful tool for altering the intensity and where we feel the stretch. In this pose, you could bring your torso to the left or to the right, but you can also twist to the left or to the right. So if you were here for last week's class, we took a twist to the right side to both work the spine and enhance the stretch of the outside of the right hip and leg. So if you're new, all of that might seem confusing and overwhelming. So don't worry about it. You don't have to digest all that information today. As long as you feel the stretch of the outside of your right hip, your pose is working. It doesn't have to be perfect or as good as it could be. But very often, the longer you practice yin or any form of yoga, the more you begin to feel the peculiarities of your body and what it needs. What it needs to relax, what it needs to let go. And so we begin to alter the postures more and more so that they actually address what we're feeling in our bodies. Let's switch sides. So we'll come through a down dog is usually the easiest way. You can stretch out a little bit too, and then come into the posture on the other side. Once again, if everyone seems to be doing all right, I may just continue to talk. But that's a little bit of just a distraction technique sometimes to keep you from hyper-focusing on how intense the postures are. So don't let that ever stop you from asking for help if you need it. I want you to go ahead and interrupt me at any time if you need a hand, okay? You might need a hand because you simply don't feel the stretch that I'm talking about, which is on this side, the outside of the left hip and leg. Or you might need a hand because you think that something's not right. You feel unsafe for whatever reason. The most likely culprit in this posture is going to be the left knee and ankle. Something very often, if you've had problems with the knee joint, if you've had knee replacements or surgeries, this posture can be questionable. So remember, there's always another way. We can always find another posture to get the same job done. All right, so we can come to a brief down dog and then relax on our abdomen in crocodile pose. All right, let's press back to a kneeling position. Keep the right foot tucked as you bring the left leg out from underneath you. Let's go over the position of the right leg in what's called a half saddle pose. So as you can see, my right foot is alongside my right hip. The toes can be tucked behind the heel, but the foot can also be flexed out to the side. For some people can do that, some can't. Let what you feel in your ankle and your knee guide you. If the foot or ankle are in discomfort or pain, you can take a blanket and place it underneath them. The knee could be straight out from the hip, or it can be angled anywhere along this axis. Okay. Then if the knee is complaining, you can try sitting up on a block. That will reduce the flexion at the knee joint and likely get rid of any sort of discomfort. You could even use two blocks if necessary. Once the knee and the ankle are happy, we want to stretch the front of the thigh. So if you feel the stretch sitting here like this, then you really don't need to do anything else. But for many people, they won't feel a stretch. So they'll begin to lower back, first to the hands, forearms, maybe onto a bolster, the crown of your head, or all the way back on your back. Very common questions are, is it okay if my knee comes up? Yes, it's fine. The right knee. Same with the right hip. If you want to roll away from your right hip a little bit, if that takes strain off of the ankle or the knee, go right ahead. Then some people come all the way back on their back and they still don't feel a stretch in their thigh. So as you can see, Lisa has bent her knee and placed her foot on the ground, her knees pointing up in the air. That's the first stage of increasing the stretch for the right thigh. I know it may not make sense at first. You're like, well, she's moving her left leg. What does that have to do with her right thigh? Trust me, it works. If that's not enough, you can drop the knee to the left. So left knee to the left would increase the stretch even more. And then finally, if you're still not feeling it, you can actually grab your left leg and pull it in. And Hannah's doing that over there. She's actually holding her foot as she pulls it in. So that's an extreme, but some students need to go that far in order to feel the stretch. Remember, the right thigh is what we're trying to stretch. But as we've discussed before in this class, when I talk about the wetsuit analogy, your whole body is interconnected. So even though it may not make sense, unless we've studied anatomy, why manipulating one leg would affect the stretch in the front of the opposite thigh, again, it works. We can feel it. I'll remind you one last time that if it's not working for some reason, just let me know. Sometimes just a small modification of what you're doing is all that's necessary to get the right stretch. Human movement is complex. It's not easy. And yoga teaching generally is done under a 200-hour teacher training program. 200 hours is not a lot of time. And you can barely scratch the surface of understanding anatomy in that time. And some programs emphasize anatomy more than others. So it's very easy for a yoga teacher to get in and out of teacher training without really understanding how to work with the human body in order to achieve certain desired results. It's not their fault. It's just where we are right now with yoga in this country. So if you run into any sort of trouble, just let me know, and we'll likely be able to find a solution together. And the reason why we need to do it together, again, is because your body is unique. I can study all day long about human anatomy, human physiology, and all of those things are maps. But the map is not the territory. A map of the human body is not your body. I have a friend who's a surgeon, and she says that every time she opens up the body, there's all kinds of surprises in there. And she's seen a lot of bodies on the inside, and yet they're all different. So this is a good reminder to us about the nature of reality and truth. There's a part of us that wants to be very lazy. And I don't mean physically lazy. I mean mentally lazy. We don't want to keep seeing reality as it is. We want to create mental shortcuts. We give people, places, and things names. And then instead of actually seeing the thing itself or the person itself, which is really beyond naming, judgment, understanding, comprehension, we simply see the name that we've given it or the judgment that we've given to that thing, a sort of mental shortcut. Then we can move on to something else. What I've found in my own life and experience is this mental shortcutting actually takes all the vibrancy out of life, all the juice. And we sort of skim along the surface, just naming everything, labeling everything, never really diving deep into it. All right. Let's go ahead and roll away from the right leg, free it. And then make your way up when you're ready. And we'll switch sides. Same thing, other side. Take your time, and again, let me know if you have trouble. I said in the first pose that was a pretty innocuous pose, not a lot of problems. This one's a totally different story. So this one can create problems if we are not careful with what we're doing. Anytime you're rotating your femur bone and using your tibia to create that rotation, there is a risk for the knee because the knee joint connects those two bones. This is your femur and this is your tibia, right? So we're not that interested in the internal rotation, but generally in this position, your leg will be in an internal rotation, at least slightly. So the target is the front of the left thigh. We'd like to feel stretched there. Those are your quadriceps. And at the front of your hip, where you may also feel a stretch, those are called the hip flexors. While they perform different functions, the quadriceps straightens the knee, and the hip flexor lifts the leg or tilts the pelvis toward the front of the thigh, depending on which is moving. They share a muscle, which is called rectus femoris. So they're a very intimately related group of muscles. And potentially, they can both stretch here. You may have noticed that you feel it in your back as well, especially if you're all the way on your back. And that's because it is also a back bend, so you don't need to be concerned. Some compression in the back is to be expected. So there's a sort of balance that we want to maintain in the muscles of our hips and our legs. Problems can be created when one muscle group becomes overly strong or overly flexible. So for instance, you don't want to stretch out your hamstrings excessively without also stretching out the quadriceps, because in many regards, they balance one another out. And this can be a problem for what you might call an amateur stretcher, someone who really doesn't methodically look at their leg and their body in a sort of more scientific way, and they just know a couple stretches and do them haphazardly. This can sometimes happen to runners. They hear they're supposed to stretch, so they go for a run, and then they just will randomly kick their leg up on something and just do a little stretching, stretch it out just real quick. But they're not really addressing the whole structure of the hips and the legs. They're just doing something they saw on TV or they saw their friend do. So this is why it's important that either we understand a little bit about the human body or our teachers do. Because otherwise, we can end up creating more problems than we solve with our exercise. The intention is to be healthy, to stay healthy, to keep moving for the rest of our lives without pain, without discomfort. And this is actually possible. It happens in cultures around the world. It doesn't happen very often in our culture. It's not so much what we're doing, but probably more what we're not doing, which is moving enough and moving in the right ways. Again, as I alluded to earlier, many of us, or at least I did, grew up with this idea of exercise and health being just sort of counting calories, burning calories. But there's a lot more to human health than just how many calories did we burn. How many steps did we take? Not every step is created equal. Depending on what kind of terrain you're walking on, what type of shoes you're wearing, if there are inclines or not, all of this will affect actually how much, how beneficial each step is. All right, let's unwind. Let's rebound on our back, just relax, take it easy for a moment. All right, let's bring our legs in, give them a nice squeeze. We'll slide hands under the hips, extend the legs up, lift the head and neck. Slowly lower the legs toward the ground. Hover for a moment, pop the legs up, come all the way up seated. All right, so as many of you know, we started doing yoga nidra at the end of the class, so we'll go an extra 15 minutes. If you have somewhere that you need to go to immediately, it's almost 6 o'clock now, or 5:30 now. So if you need to run, you can run. Otherwise, let's set up for our yoga nidra. So we'll turn around so the feet face that wall. Take a bolster underneath the knees. Go ahead and lay on your back. And try and lay flat with your head and your heart on the same plane. If you would like, you can roll a very thin blanket and place it underneath your neck. So you can support the neck, but try and have your head and your heart on the same plane, on the same level. Rest the back of your knees on the bolster and try and position yourself so that there's nothing touching the soles of your feet or the palms of your hands. Arms could be by your sides, they could be overhead, straight or bent, and generally we would like the palms up. If you would like to use an eye pillow over your eyes, feel free. This practice is called Yoga Nidra. Yoga Nidra means sleep meditation. It's a very beginner-friendly meditation practice, and yet also very, very powerful. There are really only two things to concern yourself with as a practitioner. One is you allow your body to be still. That can take practice, so be patient, but know that with time it gets easier and easier to just lay there and be still without moving. Second, you'd like to remain alert and awake throughout the practice. So if you're someone who finds that you tend to fall asleep very easily, or you've done this before and you always find yourself dozing off, my recommendation is to bend one or both elbows and have your hands in the air. And then as you begin to fall asleep, your arms will relax and will actually wake you up and alert you to the fact that you're falling asleep. This will keep you present and aware.